This episode of Enough is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace have come back to join us again on the 70 Decibels Network for June, and we're so happy about this. Squarespace give you everything you need to create an amazing professional website by utilizing simple-to-master WYSIWYG tools, and we're really happy that we get to keep telling you about them this month. A recent addition to Squarespace that we've spoken about in the past is their new domain service. With every annual account, you get a free custom domain name that they will painlessly enable on your site. You don't need to worry about making any DNS changes. Squarespace take care of everything on the back end. All you need to do is pick a name that's available. And if you want an email address for this new domain, Squarespace will hook you up with Google Apps integration right out of the box. No need to worry about MX records and all the mess that comes with it. You say what you want and they'll hook you up. Squarespace have created the ultimate package to start in your next website, blog, or project. It's painless and hassle-free, starting at only $8 a month. You should go check it out at squarespace.com/70decibels and start your 2-week free trial, no credit card required. And if you sign up, make sure to use the code 70decibels6, that's 6 for the month of June, so that's 70decibels6. Use that at checkout and you get 10% off. It's also let Squarespace know that we sent you. They're a great support to the network, and if you support them, they'll continue to support us, and we can continue making the great shows you love. Now, let's get on with this episode of Enough.
Hey there, Michael.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Dude, I'm all right.
That's cool. You sound chill.
You know, I am kind of chill today. I don't know what it is. My toe's feeling a little bit better, so
excellent.
So I'm starting to get kind of excited for that. I started off getting excited for getting back to walking for long distances, if not running, again. It's a beautiful, beautiful day here. It's 85 degrees Fahrenheit. And no, I'm not going to try to do the Celsius in reverse. That's
warm.
Really difficult.
Nice and warm is probably the correct conversion.
Yeah, actually, that would be, I'm thinking about 28, 29.
I'll believe you. Whatever
okay,
you say.
I don't know. See, you got to do the conversion while I finish talking about why I'm so chill. And also I started off the day right. I've eaten very well. Had a very nice, very healthy lunch. Started off the day with 100 push-ups. So I'm feeling fit, feeling in shape, which is the perfect segue to introduce our guest.
Yes.
Mike, who do we have with us? You do the honors.
We have with us today Mr. Andrew Marvin, who is a friend of yours, Pat, I would hasten to say.
Yes, yeah.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Very good thing. I've managed to say, heard it there, to my ear, you sound quite a lot like David Sparks. Just putting that out there.
Oh, well, that's quite a compliment.
I can hear that. There's something in your voice.
Yeah, you're right. There's a bit of Sparky in there.
You got that spark. Oh, that's terrible.
Bit of that Max spark.
Oh, we shouldn't be allowed to make puns. I don't know why. I don't know why I think I'm allowed to do it. They're always horrible.
Yeah, well, you know. So Andrew has, I mentioned him on the show before. His site is Quarter Life Engagement. Is that correct?
It's Enlightenment, actually.
Enlightenment, sorry. Quarter life Enlightenment. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, Enlightenment, engagement. You want to be engaged with your Enlightenment anyway, so, you know.
Yes, I've always said that.
Yeah. So, I mentioned him a couple of times before because he wrote a really great post on barefoot running that I mentioned on a couple of the shows that were topically related to that. But also within that post was some talk of paleo and good paleo resources. And at the risk of turning this into, or becoming, I don't know, more like the host of some other radio network who's big into paleo, I wanted to have him on to discuss it, just simply because I'd almost say almost a lifestyle. It's not just a diet. It's almost a lifestyle that I am intrigued by, mm-hmm. somewhat skeptical of, but skeptical in that sort of curious, mysterious sort of way.
Sure.
But I see a lot of good simplicity there. When it comes to food preparation, when it comes to eating, I like the general idea of bringing together, food in that very holistic way. Or I should say approaching food in that very holistic way. And so I wanted to find out more about it. So, here's Andrew to tell me all about it. So first of all, Andrew, just kind of, you know, give the overview of what the idea behind, you know, paleo is. You know,
sure.
It's become kind of a buzzword.
Well, the paleo diet and also related the primal blueprint is exactly like you say, Patrick. It's more of a lifestyle than it is a diet. And basically it stems from the belief that humans have been evolving for a couple million years or whatever it is. And during that time, we evolved to eat and live and exist in a certain way and, you know, survival of the fittest and all that. And so what it basically says is that we should be eating and sort of living as our ancestors did, because that way of living and eating is what has allowed our species to survive for these millions of years. And that's pretty much the overall mindset. And we can talk a little bit about the specifics of the diet and the do's and don'ts and stuff if you like.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that, because so I have recently, in training for a grower challenge, just getting in better shape in general and losing the 20 or so pounds that I have, you know, and reducing my waistline. I have not strictly paleo, but certainly a lot of the changes that I made, going more towards good proteins and good fats,
right?
You know, cutting down the carbs, cutting, you know, pretty much cutting them out, cutting out the sugars, you know, at least from a you know, refined sugar point of view, refined flour point of view, going more towards towards grains and whole grains to replace some of that nutrition. I found that, you know, whenever I happen for some reason to tweet a picture of my lunch, I get a lot of people responding to me saying, "Hey, you must be doing paleo." You know, because it's like a typical lunch for me is like a lunch I had today. So today I had avocado egg salad,
which
basically is an avocado for, you know, three boiled eggs that I chopped up, mix in a bowl, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper. Boom, done. That's it. Avocado egg salad. Right. And, you know, that's full of protein, full of healthy fat. You know, and it's things like that, that when I talk about them, when I mention them, I get a lot of feedback from folks saying, "Oh, yeah, that's kind of paleo. Are you doing that sort of thing?" I'm like, "No, I'm just trying to eat right."
Right.
Let's get into a little bit of the specifics. What are kind of the do's and the don'ts from, you know, more specific perspective?
Well, first of all, I would say that the biggest thing with paleo and primal is no grains. And that's that's kind of a discrepancy, because people tend to think of it as a low carb diet, which it sort of is, but at the same time, it's not no carb in the sense of you don't want any carbohydrates. You do want carbohydrates. You just want significantly less than the average person thinks that they need.
Gotcha.
And the primary way of lowering your carbohydrate intake is by eschewing grains and grain-based products.
And all of them, even whole grains?
Correct, yep.
Okay.
And you get, but that doesn't mean you're not having any carbohydrates, because you still get the required carbohydrates from fruits and vegetables, primarily, and the other foods that you eat. But most of, I think the conventional wisdom is that people, you know, thrive on carbohydrates and they need lots of them because carbohydrates equal energy. And based on the primal or paleo way of thinking, you actually need significantly less carbohydrates unless you're like a hardcore athlete. You actually need far less carbohydrates than we're typically told. Yeah. So by eliminating grains, that really cuts down your carbohydrate intake. And I think according to the Primal Blueprint, which is a subdivision of paleo, you only need between 100 and 150 grams of carbohydrates is kind of like the sweet spot. And if you, the more you lower that, the easier and more effortless the weight loss is supposed to be. Okay. So grains is the big thing. It's not low carb so much as it's no grains. That would be the biggest thing. And then beyond the no grains part, it's obviously it's a lot of healthy proteins, healthy fats, and fruits, vegetables, meat, fowl, nuts, some seeds, and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, okay, so no grains, getting most of your carbohydrates from you know, fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Are there particular fruits and vegetables that are, you know, kind of especially good, kind of considered staples? And I assume that includes beans of some sort, too, or not?
Well, beans are kind of actually in a gray area. There are several gray areas that you kind of need to experiment with on a personal level and determine if they work for you or not.
Okay.
Beans are a good source of carbohydrates. They're certainly better than bread, you know, than eating a loaf of bread with dinner. I personally don't eat beans just because I don't like them very much. But beans are actually a good way, a good source of sort of the extra carbohydrates if you are an athlete and you do train on a regular basis and you need a little bit more than the average person. Beans are a good way to go. And I know that Tim Ferriss, who does the slow carb diet, advocates a lot of beans and lentils, which is different, slightly one of the differences between slow carb and the paleo diet. So if beans work for you, you know, there are far worse things that you could be eating, but they're certainly not an essential part of paleo.
Okay. So paleo, we're mainly talking meat, fruit, vegetable. That's, you know, and nuts. Nuts, where do nuts fall?
Yeah, nuts are great. They're a great source of, they can be very filling and a great source of healthy fats. The only problem with nuts is, and this is a thing that I struggle with on an almost daily basis, is that they can be very addictive, especially if you get, you know, nuts with sea salt or something. It can be easy to have more than just a small handful. And because they're so calorically dense, you have to be careful that you don't overeat when it comes to nuts.
Well, and also I would imagine because they're really all over the board, right? Like the nutritional value in a cashew is going to be different than the nutritional value in a walnut, for instance, you know, or a sunflower seed, right? You know, that you kind of have this wide, you know, kind of varied swath of possibilities there. And because of that, I would imagine you have to be a little bit more careful into knowing what nuts are better. You know, I wouldn't say necessarily better than others because they're all good, but you know, there are some that are better than others. And there's a particular one that I know Ferris is a big fan of, and I can't remember which one it is.
I think it's he mentions Brazil nuts.
Yeah, Brazil nuts, there was like a Kona nut or I forget. In any case, I digress. All right, so fruits, veggies, nuts, and meat, lots of meat, because we know that our caveman ancestors, they hunted down things and killed them and ate them raw.
I got a great workout in doing so.
Right. Until fire came along, at which point they realized, oh, we can cook the death out of these meats as well. And so, that said, I guess part of the disconnect I have is this idea, it's twofold. Number one, how much do we really know about cavemen and what they ate and what they didn't eat and stuff like that? And I would imagine that it was completely different, no matter all over the world in the different areas of the country. It was basically like, or what we now call our country. It was basically whatever was available within a, say, 5 to 10 mile radius was what you ate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, I'm not an anthropologist by any means, but I think that, and I think one of the reasons that you're kind of intrigued by paleo in terms of the simplicity is that when you kind of think about sort of from a common sense sort of perspective, like what would our ancestors have available to them? They certainly wouldn't have, boxed cereal and ice cream and candy bars and that sort of thing. Right. But at the same time, how likely do you think it would be for a caveman to be walking through a field and pick up, pluck some wheat and start chewing on that, So when you think about it, it seems like, meat, obviously, with the hunting and stuff, and then fruits and vegetables and, mushrooms and berries and all kinds of things that they could find. When you think about it from that sort of natural, common sense sort of perspective of what would have been available to a caveman, it lines up pretty well with what the paleo diet advocates.
Yeah, okay, all right. And so, coming back, how did you get interested in paleo primal? Yeah. How did you jump on the popular bandwagon fad diet of the moment?
Well, it actually started off quite a few years ago now, I suppose in probably 2009, and it's kind of interesting because up until that point, I had never been health conscious at all. I mean, I've been in the martial arts since I was 9 years old or so, but I never put any thought into, what I ate. I was always in the mindset of, life is too short, so go ahead and have your ice cream and stuff. And it wasn't until I actually broke up with a girlfriend and when that sort of thing happens, you kind of have to find things to distract yourself. So what I decided to do was that I would start, starting to take care of myself a little bit more. And part of that happened at the tail end of college, because when you go to college, you tend to take better care of yourself. At least I did. You tend to take better care of yourself than you did when you were living at home. Mm-hmm. Because you have to, because there's nobody else there looking out for you. So I decided to start, working out a little bit more regularly and to start watching what I eat. And I wasn't really interested in any diets. I didn't really know anything about them. A couple friends of mine had done Weight Watchers, and it just never seemed like a lot of work, and it didn't seem particularly interesting to me. And then I forget exactly how I stumbled across the Primal Blueprint, which is Mark Sisson's website, marksdailyapple.com. Uh-huh. But I think I stumbled across it somehow, as you do on the internet, and just started reading about it. And like so many other people, it just made sense to me from the beginning. Just when I started reading about it and the philosophy behind it and how it wasn't a restrictive diet so much as it was a way of thinking and a way of living and a lifestyle, like you said, it just seems like this is something that I could do because it makes sense to me. It wasn't somebody was telling me about it, but it wasn't, like somebody on TV telling me that this is the way you're supposed to eat. It was in a sense, but it also, I understood and it made sense to me. I wasn't just taking his word for it. I was like, yeah, that makes sense when you think about it from an evolutionary perspective. And so I tried it for a while and, through a few ups and downs and eventually kind of adopted it full time. And it's been great. I really love it.
So you pretty much, you do paleo, like you don't cheat, you don't, you don't have any days where it's like, an ice cream's not going to kill me.
Well, no, I'm not perfect by any means. And you, that's one of the things that you sort of have to wrestle with. And one of the things that Mark Sisson advocates is this thing called the 80-20% principle, wherein if you try to shoot for 100% perfection, number one, you're probably going to fail in your quest to be perfect all the time. So if you shoot for 100 and you end up being primal 80% of the time, then you're doing quite well and certainly significantly better than the majority of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tend to do is when I have control over the situation, like if I'm at home or if I'm determining, in other words, if I'm not a guest in somebody's house or if it's mm-hmm. not a special occasion or something like that, then I'm pretty strict with the eating aspects of it. But, you know, if it's my little cousin's graduation party and she's got cake, or it's a birthday party, or, you know, I'm a guest in somebody's house and, you know, they've made a meal for me, I'm not going to be rude in my rejection because it's not paleo. You know, I might limit my portions, you know, subtly. But, so there are off days that you just mm-hmm. kind of have to roll with it. But then the important thing is that after that cheat meal is over, that you just step right back on the primal path, as it were.
Yeah, one of the ideas that I know, you know, Ferris discusses in the 4-Hour Body, and I've read other places, is this idea that, like the 80-20 rule, that it's actually important to build in almost some cheat days, some days where you know, say, okay, I'm just going to, you know, because what happens is your body gets very used to repetition,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you're eating the same sorts of things all the time, your body will be like, oh, okay, this is, you know, this is the new normal.
Right.
And that it actually helps to shock it every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Basically to say, okay, I haven't had sugar for, you know, for a week. Let me eat a bowl of ice cream just to shake things up a bit. And that mm-hmm. your body actually thrives on that kind of, you know, that kind of shock to the routine.
Yeah.
Because then that's what kicks these things that, you know, combat against, you know, weight gain and you know, the kind of, it helps to, jumpstart the metabolism, as it were.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, I'm an English major, so I have a very hard time remembering and regurgitating the science behind these sort of theories.
Me too.
But, I mean, on the one hand, you have to have those, you have to treat yourself once in a while. Otherwise, you know, you'll go insane. So for peace of mind, I mean, every once in a while, you just got to kind of step off the path for a little while. And then I think that there's definitely something to the idea of giving your body some healthy stress.
Mm-hmm.
So like you said, if you're paleo 80% of the time and once in a while, you know, you give your body a little shock, I mean, in the long run, that's probably good for it. It's sort of like sprinting is one of the exercises that the Primal Blueprint advocates, and that is a form of healthy stress on the body.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. You're pushing yourself very hard for a short amount of time, and in the long run, you know, it's better for you. Same thing with something like a cold shower is a form of mm-hmm. healthy stress on the body. You know, mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable, but it's good for you in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that cheat meals kind of fall into that same category. And again, I don't know the science behind it, and I'm sure some of your listeners do. So I apologize if I offend any of them. But if you once in a while, if you jumpstart shock the system, I think there's no harm in that.
Yeah, very cool. And finally, we're going to start wrapping up here. I also noticed there's a fair amount of intersection between, you know, the, you know, kind of, you know, more hardcore, stringent paleo folks, as well as the barefoot running movement coming mm-hmm. from the same base idea, which is, our ancestors for thousands of years ran without Nikes and ran in just kind of, you know, some basic, you know, buffalo hide sandals or something. You know, how, yeah. you know, why shouldn't we be able to do that today? Right. If you look at the Olympians of ancient Greece and, you know, those that, you know, invented the idea of the marathon, you know, they were oftentimes running completely barefoot or, you know, if they wore anything, they wore sandals. Right.
Right.
And it's that similar sort of idea that, you know, for thousands of years, we lived one way. And then in the last, you know, in the case of running, the last 50 years or so.
Yeah.
You know, we've decided that heavily padded running shoes are the way to go. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And why, you know, why that shift, why that change? And why do we suddenly think that this is better? And what was the problem it was trying to solve?
Yeah.
Do we, you know, would you say that there's a lot of that same kind of motivation and intersection there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of the, again, I tend to lean towards the primal blueprint sort of side of things, which is very similar to the paleo diet. It's all kind of under the same umbrella. But the primal blueprint advocates a specific exercise regimen, and which, again, is based on the same thought process as the diet, that human beings have survived and thrived for millions of years without gym memberships and sneakers and things like that. And Primal Blueprint Fitness advocates primarily a lot of slow movement. So a lot of walking, a lot of not sitting at a desk all day. And it also advocates strength training, and that's only a couple days a week. And it's that's primarily bodyweight exercises like push-ups, squats, pull-ups, planks, and things like that.
Yeah.
And then once in a while.
Which is pretty much what I do.
Yeah. And once in a while you have the sprinting, which is that sort of, that good sort of stress. So yeah, the barefoot thing sort of stems from the same mindset. And for me personally, it was the same sort of thing as the diet, where I hated running until I tried doing it barefoot. And it just, to me, it's just like the diet. Again, it makes sense to me, because when you are wearing sneakers, and we don't have to get too much about the specifics of the mechanics of barefoot running, but when you run with sneakers on, you tend to reach with your heel, and you tend to have a longer stride. So your heel tends to hit the ground first, and then you roll over the sole of your foot and then push off of the ball of your foot. When you're barefoot, it's the complete opposite. You tend to take shorter strides, and you land on the middle or the forefoot. And to me, that makes a lot more sense, because if you try it, like if you just tried standing up, and if you lift your toes off the ground and balance on your heels and try to bounce up and down, it's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because, and if you try doing the opposite and getting on the balls of your feet, like on your tiptoes and bouncing up and down, you can feel that your shock absorbers are not in your heels. Mm-hmm. They're in the front of your foot, in the balls of your feet. Mm-hmm. And when you wear sneakers, your heel hits the ground first, and that's why, and that causes the impact of hitting the ground to travel up into the shin and into the knee, which I think is why a lot of runners have eventually developed knee problems or shin splints or things like that. And mm-hmm. I've never encountered that with barefoot running, because you're landing on your body's natural shock absorbers, and it just sort of makes sense, and it feels more comfortable, and it's more fun because you're barefoot and you're feeling free and one with nature and all that.
One thing I like to say is, if you want to learn how to run properly, watch a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. Watch a 3-year-old run. Watch a 4-year-old run, especially if they're running around barefooted. Right.
Yeah,
just watch them run. And there you go. That's how you run properly. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is not really rocket science. It's really just relearning what we trained ourselves out of.
Yeah. And you can feel it, because when you, even if you run, you know, say you run 100 feet with sneakers on, and then you take shoes off and you run back barefoot, you can feel your running gait changes naturally because mm-hmm. you're barefoot, and you'll start to emphasize, because you don't want your bare heel bone to be striking the ground that hard. Right. So your body naturally adjusts to land where you're supposed to land.
Right. So, do you, curious, do you run completely barefoot? Are you doing, barefoot running shoes like mm-hmm. Vibram Five Figures or things like that? Because, in an urban environment, unlike our paleo ancestors didn't have to worry about stepping on grass, right. Or stepping on glass, mm-hmm. We do. So, what are you using to protect your feet?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you have an environment like a field where there aren't too many rocks or anything, running barefoot or really barefoot is great. But obviously, you're not always going to have those perfect conditions. So yeah, I definitely use Vibram Five Fingers, Vibram or Vibram, and there's a bunch of different models now. They seem to be coming out with models a couple times a year, and I have the KSO models, which stands for Keep Stuff Out. Yep. And each model is tailored for a different sort of sport, supposedly. But the KSOs are really great. They're kind of like one of the most versatile models. They have mm-hmm. the strap that goes over the top, and they keep stuff out so you can run on the beach and things. And they're really great. Some people are averse to having things between their toes. But for me, they're extremely comfortable, and I've had my pair for a couple of years now, so they last a long time, and they allow me to run on pavement without having to worry about rocks and things. And it's good because you're still sort of in tune with the ground. I mean, it's not like running in sneakers where you can't tell when you step on things. You can still definitely feel that mm-hmm. you're barefoot, and you can feel, if you land on a rock, you're going to feel it. It's not going to hurt your skin because you'll have that protective sole. But they're very good. They're a great product, and I recommend them if anybody wants to go barefoot running.
So, just to wrap up here, where can, people find you and get in touch if they got more questions about this stuff, number one. Number two, I just wanted to mention, you're doing all sorts of interesting things, both at your site. You've got these 30-day experiments you've been doing. Which are all very interesting, I know you recently had. You just ended an experiment and you just began a new one. You say begin them every month,
right? Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask. What? Remind me again. What was the one you just ended, and what's the one you're in now?
Well, I think what you're referring to is I'm treating 2012 as sort of the year of the habit. Plenty bloggers have done, I'm sure, in the past and are continuing to do. But basically what I'm doing for this year is trying a different habit every month. And so far it's been going pretty well. I stopped biting my nails in February, and I started flossing every day in January. And last month in May, I experimented with tracking all of my finances, which I did using an iPhone app called Saver. Which was a very enlightening experience. And the premise behind it is that if on December 31st you decide, okay, I'm going to be a completely new person and be totally awesome starting tomorrow, it's probably not going to work out. And that's, I think, the reason why a lot of people end up not fulfilling their New Year's resolutions. So instead, I decided just to take one thing and focus on one habit every month. And it's been going really well so far. I haven't succeeded in instilling all the habits. In March, I tried to read every day, which just did not work out, for scheduling and life reasons, as things tend to happen. And this month, I'm kind of doing something a little bit different because it's a little bit more vague and a little bit more abstract. But I'm trying something called No Wasted Days, where I try to get something done in the sense of working towards where I want to be. And I'm going under a bit of a transition right now because I just moved out on my own, moved into a place with a friend, and this is part of what my website kind of talks about a lot, is trying to figure out who you are and sort of dealing with that quarter-life crisis sort of thing where you're growing up and you're trying to establish yourself and establish your identity. And in the month of June, I'm trying to make sure that every day I ask myself, what am I going to do today that's going to help me be the person that I want to be and get to the place that I want to get to eventually, so that I don't get overwhelmed with, you know, who am I? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm 25 and I don't have any direction in my life and that sort of thing. So that's the habit thing.
So where is this site? Do the plug now.
Yeah, my website is called Quarter Life Enlightenment, and you can go to quarterlifeenlightenment.com, or you can just go to andrewmarvin.net. It's MARVIN.net, and that's kind of my it's my blog. The tagline is finding inner peace through simplicity, technology, perspective, and other means. And
it's what we believe in.
Yeah, kind of like I said, it's just inner peace was something that my philosophy professor introduced to me in college. And it's sort of this ideal state where you have no wants or desires or fears or worries, and you're just kind of content with the way things are. And because it's very difficult to achieve 100% perfect peace, the blog is kind of just little ways or big ways even of thinking or living or eating or anything really that sort of helps me maintain that sense of inner peace, even if it's in some small way.
Very cool. So, and you have a new podcast that you're doing as well.
I do have a new podcast. It's very exciting. It's Crush on Radio, which is a music podcast. I'm a huge music fan, and it's not really actually it is kind of it does fall into my website's topics, because music is a huge source of inner peace for me. Crush on Radio is the new podcast that I'm doing with Richard Anderson, who writes sanspoint.com, and Matt Keeley, who writes kittysneezes.com. And they're both great guys and very knowledgeable, probably more knowledgeable than I am about music. And what we tend to do is we tend to each have a pick during the week, so that we'll talk about an artist that we're recommending, and we'll sort of have a general music discussion topic at the end. So it's going really well. We're having a lot of fun with it, and people can find that at crushonradio.com. So
yeah, I've taken a listen. It's actually really good.
Thank you very much.
And I think I have you to blame for getting me addicted to these darn classic album things.
Oh, they're so good, aren't they? I know we talked about, you actually beat us to it, because you guys talked about Steely Dan a couple episodes ago on Enough, and that was one of my picks, I think, on episode 4, I believe, of Crush on Radio, where we talked about Asia, and which is a great record, which we can save for another day.
Yeah, but I mean, we've you know, so now I've gone through and watched watch the U2 Joshua Tree one, which is which is excellent. The Duran Duran one, which was surprisingly good, about Rio. I mean, all of these things are just great, and I blame you for hours of my time being being taken.
Oh, you're welcome. Things. Yeah, I've only watched a couple of them. I know I've watched the Frank Zappa one, the Steely Dan one, Fleetwood Mac, and probably the Rush documentary was very good. They're great.
I got the Fleetwood Mac on deck. That's going to be my next one. They do Rumors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot for coming on and chatting with me about this stuff, Andrew. I'm gonna take a much less cynical approach, I think, to the whole paleo thing.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys so much for having me on, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Very cool. And Mike, thank you as always for sitting back,
guys,
and taking care of the helm.
I've just been listening. It's interesting as always. Thanks so much for joining us, Andrew. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
And we'll chat later.
We will. Cheers.
Cheers.